Hey everyone, this is Connor. Before we get started, I just want to encourage you to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/podsidepicnic. If you become a patron, you'll get access to multiple exclusive episodes every month. And you can also join our patrons-only Discord chat, where Pete and I talk informally with the Podside Picnic community. So if you like the show, go ahead and check us out at patreon.com/podsidepicnic. Thanks.
Welcome back to Podside, everyone. This is, of course, Carlo, and it's me and Pedro, Pete. Hey. How are you today?
Hey. I'm doing all right. Just, you know, hanging with the dogs after a long trip. I got to listen to the book in the car, thanks to your your follow-up.
So. I do try to be, you know, thorough,
yep,
comprehensive.
I prefer to read a story we're talking about, but if I'm going to spend 9.5 hours in the car today at high speeds, having an audiobook is a good move.
Well, you know, and enough about your commute, Pete.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah, Pete, let me have you ever thought to yourself, you know, I'm really worried about, you know, what's going to happen, all the plans I had. Have you ever considered maybe just hypnotizing someone's baby and transferring all your memories to them?
All the time.
All the time. You know, here I was. I was really worried that I was the only weirdo thinking about that. But here you are. Excellent. Well, you know, I think that that makes us sort of qualified to talk about this this story that we're going to be talking about today, which is I want to say it's the Dauphin's Metaphysics.
Yeah, maybe Dauphin, but I mean, honestly, since it's,
I believe Dauphin is the feminine.
The feminine. Okay.
Yes. I the only reason I know this is, well, there's two reasons. The first one and the earliest one for me was that my aunt, when I was a wee lad, had a standard size poodle called Dauphin.
Ah, well, and also Belle Dauphin sounds stupid, so sorry.
Well, you know, that sounds like the way some American would be like, yeah, it's Belle Dauphin. Yeah, we'll just call you that.
Well, could you imagine, like, all of those TikTok and Instagram influencers if we decided we had to preserve them, so we took babies and hypnotized them to do all of their obnoxious shit?
Well, I mean, this is a story that does have memologists. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's mnemologists.
There you go.
Yes. I mean, it's I did really enjoy this. So I suppose we're already cracking jokes about something that we haven't even explained, right?
Yeah, well, why would we explain?
What? Explaining? What are we? Amateurs? We're not even that.
Indeed.
So we're going to be talking about the Dauphin's Metaphysics, or the Dauphin's Metaphysics, by Eric Schutzgeibel. And basically, this is an interesting one because Dauphin or Dauphin or whatever, however you
That's
fucking pronounce it.
That's going to drive you nuts, dude.
It really is. It really is. You know, and it's weird because I listened to the audio of it and it's just sort of like slid right off the surface of my brain.
Yeah. So I'm going out to Wikipedia where you can type a word and they'll give you the pronunciation.
Ah, good job. Anyway, one of the things that was really interesting to me about this is how the word dolphin sort of connotes or implies French.
Yes.
But all of the sort of like the way that it's I don't think it's like super duper like trying to go full like Chinese. I believe the main character is named after a queen in, I believe it's Shang Dynasty. I mean, this is like 860 something before Common Era. So it's, yeah, it's like a long time ago.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't catch the dynasty, but I mean, you definitely have the region correct. And it's, yeah, it's, despite the name of the royalty, I mean, he definitely tried to take reality and stir it up with a spoon so that this wasn't a story about Imperial China or France.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He just wants it to be a story. I respect this.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting technique to sort of file off or sort of like smudge the fingerprints just a tiny bit so that you can sort of look at the story. You know, like basically this is a type of, you know, like a type of philosophical experiment, right?
Yeah.
You know, sort of like personality or I guess you would, what would you call it? Because initially the story starts out talking about the self as sort of like, the self sits in the soul or what have you, right? Mm-hmm. And then somewhere around the middle of the story, it just sort of dispenses. You do not hear that phrase ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like the head of the whole country says, you know, we are going to pretend that, you know, the map is the territory.
Well, I mean, yes. But yeah, like I do like a lot of the details here. And I wish I would have taken some better notes, but I believe that there's also like the interesting little tidbits where we get like after the initial like opening scene where, you know, the Dauphin is sort of like shown to be somewhat insolent in class, challenging the professor. And then we get the scene where she's sitting amongst her peers, the other sort of professors in the academy. I did like that it's obvious that there's like tensions and little weird little rivalries that have undercurrents, but it's nothing that is like super obvious. It's subtle.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good way of putting it. It gives you enough of it to hint at the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. Like it also, I love that it sort of puts like a little bit of a, it demystifies, or smudges the halo effect that a lot of, a lot of types of these types of stories would give to, you know, the guys that know stuff, you know, and it's like, no, these people are sort of like a little bit craven, a little bit ambitious, but very, very cagey and very territorial.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do love that you get, it's also a great opportunity in the story to then like give you a small, very small, list of people, like the characters that are going to be important. Like, you know, what is it? Extraordinary Professor Ren Yong.
Yeah.
Who is the guy who knows hypnotic techniques.
Yeah. Yeah. It is too much of a weenie to be able to effectively hypnotize people. is he the one with the bow ties too?
Yes, he is. He is indeed. I mean, that is, I love that that's sort of like such a weenie little detail, right? You're like, right. Bow ties, huh? Is that's the thing you're that type of guy, huh?
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. It's sort of like, I don't think that sort of the weird fiction era is the root of all this, but I do like when author just decides to do fusion. You know what I mean? It's like there's so many advantages to it because he can build a rich world, but he doesn't have to become an expert on Imperial France or Imperial China. And mm-hmm. Nobody could say, well, actually, everybody wore, you know, green cravats. You know, it's like all of that is off the table because he just, you know, he mixed it with a spoon, and so we can have a rich world and a story, and he doesn't need to, you know, go to insane lengths.
Excuse me, that is the legalist school. you're right. I mean, I think that's the sort of like the fun of this is that it's sort of like it scratches, like it does this weird thing where it's like scratching two itches at the same time. Like it's giving you like this weird little twisty philosophical sort of almost thought experiment, right? And then it's giving you this, like you said, this like synthesis between two different, or at least using different phrases to alienate or to abstract exactly, you know, what this world is. Because it feels grounded, like this could have been something that was discussed, I don't know, in the 19th century, China somewhere, but it could equally be like anywhere where there is like a long running dynasty and sort of like this imperial urge, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It universalizes it.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's one of the things that slowly begins to turn this into like, you mentioned the weird, like weird fiction previously, Pete. And I think that's right on the money because this really tries to do the unsettling thing. Because as this progresses, the more this actual thought experiment becomes reality, it's sort of horrifying. Mm-hmm. Like it is incredibly bleak.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's the whole concept is terrifying. And did you think about the idea of consciousness upload when you were reading this?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. This is sort of the, as I was reading this, and I forgot to open it this way, but really this feels very much like it's in the same sort of milieu as something like Brainstorm, right?
Right. Right. Which makes it an interesting choice. Was that conscious?
Not particularly. I just yanked a title that I liked, and then I thought to myself, oh shit, this, yeah. Like as I was reading, I was like, oh yeah, that has sort of resonances, doesn't it? I mean, but I think that it's not necessarily like a huge coincidence either, right? Because let's face it, like, you know, like externalizing memory, some perhaps, you know, sort of low rent sort of immortality, apotheosis beyond your, you know, your body, right? Your material reality that you only have this one body and that's it, right? These are all concerns that have these are just perennial things that a lot of like back from like myth, ancient legend times, you know, we've been talking about this. We've been worried about this for a long time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's very interesting that the solution they came up with was more horrifying than my go-to of personality upload, because like you're not just filling an empty disk here. You're mm-hmm. taking somebody else's potential and stepping on it to make this happen. And what you get really doesn't seem that good to me, as long as we're being honest.
Right, exactly. Because there is that moment. So let's build up a little bit. Let's take a couple steps back because we sort of rushed into it. But I do love the build up here, right? Because the idea is that the Dauphin is basically, was it Novice Jisun Fei, basically decides that he's going to fund the main character, and I forget, Miss Professor Fu, or Professor Fu, anyway. Mm-hmm. He wants to fund her entire, you know, branch of the academy so that they can really, you know, start going after. And I believe this is based off of like an old story about something like a prince can possess the body of a cobbler.
Yeah, yeah. I think it might have been like a thought experiment thing.
Yeah, probably. Or just a basic logical argument or something, you know, like one of these philosophical arguments, I should say. And so it then becomes clear as they continue to try it, to sort of like expand upon it and to refine the processes, they realize that they can actually start to slightly overwrite a young girl's memory, so that she can slowly be convinced that something that she imagined is another way.
Right.
And that's where it becomes like very sort of material, right? They stop talking about like whether it's the soul or what have you. It then becomes like applied philosophy, if you will, right?
Exactly. It becomes a project problem rather than a thought
a moral
experience.
One.
Yeah.
Well, or a moral one at that point. You know, like I think that they do try to contend with it, but really, the issue is that the minute that there's the sort of like the throne and the entire nobility is behind this and just throwing their weight and their money at it, like everyone just goes like, okay, yeah, that's what we're gonna do. So I mean. It feels really just very quietly condemning of academia and how sort of quickly it can be captured.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because I mean, there was barely any struggle here.
Yep. Exactly. Like the minute the Dauphin comes in and says, you know, like. Yeah, like it becomes clear that he is sort of like, on the one hand, he's very enamored of the Professor Fu, but on the other, he's also has some sort of degenerative disease that is slowly like, you know, sort of like disabling him physically.
Right.
And this is his, like it feels like this is his escape hatch, right? Like, if he can throw everything he can at this problem, he could, before the disease claims him, finally, he can jump ship, if you will, right, to another body.
Exactly. God, what a desperation ploy.
I mean, but I think it's an interesting way to view it. Like let's back up a second. I don't want to get too far into, you know, hashtag discourse, but you remember, Pete, do you remember the, was the Instacart or DoorDash, all the DoorDash activism, like about I would say the last 2 years, like, people claiming that they needed, you know, like DoorDash or whatever these exploitative app things are, because, you know, supposedly because it's necessary for disability. And I'm even going to contend with that.
Very interested to see where you're going with this, my friend.
Well, no. I am not going to say that is incorrect. Like, I do agree that in a situation where the sort of public sphere has retreated from offering these services as a public good and therefore leaving it open to privatization and, you know, sort of like this gig working, it is necessary then, right? Like, if you live in an area and you're disabled, you have mobility issues, or you can't move, you can't go to the store, what have you, you need someone to deliver stuff to you, right? No,
yeah.
That is no judgment on my part.
Absolutely.
But you are then forced to engage in essentially like and participate in the exploitation of someone's labor, right?
Right. It's, I mean, this is only necessary because of the givens.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that the issue a lot of the times with those types of arguments is that it tries to pin, as with many things in this country, because we love to think of us ourselves all as individuals, it usually ends up, you know, demonizing or, you know, making a hero or making a villain of one person. And completely ignoring how, you know, these people are both existing within a system that is sort of incentivized to put them at odds with each other often.
Sure.
Right. So in this case, what I'm getting at is that it feels like a commentary on that type of complicity, right, in the system that, you know, the Dauphin, who is much more, you know, powerful than most, is offering this to himself, right, as sure. a way to then overwrite someone's, you know, because he's paid good money for a surrogate, right? And you know, like everything's sort of been legally ironed out. The morality, well, we don't have to worry about that. It's legal.
Right. Exactly. Well, and it makes me... now I'm probably jumping around here, but I keep going to the morality of it, all right, which is a weird place to go. But I start thinking about, you notice how they're doing this with poor people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, like that is a scale you'd have to weigh. I mean, there are positives to this horror if you're in a, like a 1700s or 1600s dystopian hellscape. It's like, you know, your child will have enough to eat and will actually become royalty. We're just going to force their personality to be something else.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think it's one of those things that if everyone were sort of on a level playing field, let's put it that way, right? Or at least had enough, would you, even if you like weren't rich, right? Would you be willing to then give up? Because again, this is the, you know, like the Dauphin and his family and his peers. You know, the nobility have all created the playing field, right?
Yeah.
So it is fun that they get to then call all the plays and everything else, right? So I mean, it is that question, which I think that the story is very wise in not centering that necessarily, right? Because then it nags at you as a reader, right? If you're sitting there and you realize the power imbalance, it is something that'll just sort of like gnaw at you because he's like, well, shit, this is like, they're just paying poor people. Well, how do they feel about it? I mean, obviously they need money, but if they didn't need money, would they agree to this? You know, that's always the question.
Yeah, exactly. Woof, man.
I mean, it's a story that's sort of designed to slowly become more and more disturbing, right? Total respect. I do also love that that one of the things that happens, right? So how they go about it is really interesting because for the most part, they offer certain details that almost feel like hand waving, but the details are so detailed. Like they have such specific things to them that it is like, it feels like you're like a type of discipline that is slowly, you know, becoming prominent, right? What is it? They use hypnosis, but not only hypnosis, right? It's, what is it? Young was, I discovered, an expert only on the history of hypnosis, as you said, Pete. Yes. Practical applied hypnosis required an aura of seriousness and confidence, and Young couldn't face the most willing novice for 2 minutes without breaking his mien. After a few months of failed efforts, I suggested Jung try children's hypnotic subjects, which is what the Dauphins wanted anyway. At this, surprisingly, Jung proved a natural. His 5 and 8-year-olds gladly became chickens or kings, recalled entirely fictional events in vivid detail, and learned long strings of words and numbers, all at his gentle suggestion. I hired singers and storytellers and painters. The painter Zinaida Serebryakova from one of the barbarian tribes could instantly sketch any scene described, making it seem somehow closer to the truth than one's own memory. The storyteller Shan Tiangfang could so fully carry his audience to another place they had to later remind themselves they hadn't personally been there. And so on. You know, so basically they hire a bunch of artists to sort of provide like external, I guess, foci for the memories. So the painter would paint these scenes, and slowly they would come to like the hypnotized subject would then slowly integrate them as actual, you know, like things that they saw, like they're in their memory and so on. Right. So the idea here is that they will slowly remind these hypnotized subjects of stuff that the person that they're going to become a host to, or the personality or whatever we want to call it exactly, has sort of like detailed, like they've taken detailed memoirs, journals, all that good stuff. Right. And they use all of this to sort of like basically slowly hypnotize them into believing that these are their own memories.
Right. God.
I mean, it's fascinating, but it's also like, as I've said before, it just slowly becomes more and more off-putting and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, the fact that this is happening, there's no giveaway technology in this, but it definitely feels like the past.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't say it has a steampunk vibe by any means, but just sort of this, makes it in the
anachronistic sense. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it just sort of feels like this rude, like rude fumbling at somebody's brain. Like I picture the first time I tried to get a bra off somebody. Like that is the level of skill and expertise being used to try and like remold these guys' brains.
Yeah, like greasily pawing through your gray matter.
No, yeah, it's thanks. Just horrific.
Yeah. Buddy, did you wash your hands before you did this? Come on, man.
Exactly.
I do like that when she is presented with it, right? I do think that it's interesting that she says she does form like the most formal, you know, sort of like and toothless complaint, right? She when the Dauphin approaches her talking about like, you know, like his mother could walk until she was 50, meaning that the disease is claiming him, you know, much faster than it did his mom. She says it would be unethical to commit a child to a life of delusion. I said neither sitting or setting down my tin lamp, and it would serve no purpose, for the child would never be you. The material configuration view no more allows transfer between bodies than does the elementary soul view. What you seek is a metaphysical impossibility. Right. And so this is where he's like, no, no, you don't understand. I'm going to send as much money as I can, because as he says here, there is no undisputed heir after me. Right. When the king dies, it will be civil war. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting to me that then he poses the question, and any power will. Right. Well, if I do not continue, there will be disorder, right?
Yeah.
And granted, like, I understand that this is one of these things where you have to then put, like, okay, is harm mitigation trying to prevent a civil war by just accepting yet another immortal, like a series of new bodies that just become hosts for an immortal? I don't know. Like, what is that? Is it just ends up being like a game of telephone? I suppose, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would like to point out that every ruler in history thought everything would fall apart if they weren't around.
Well, but that's exactly it, right? It's the eternal sort of like question that power posits, right? If I go, there will be disorder.
Yep.
You know, and so then obviously the implicit threat there is, you know, like you have to keep me. You know, because of course there might be another power out there, but you know, at least, you know, we may be bad, but at least we're not those guys, huh?
Yep. We're the devil, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, I mean, it often works because we prefer to sort of muck about with something that we understand or maybe don't understand, but at least live with every day.
Yeah, the familiar
terrors. Try something new. Yes.
Let's not talk politics.
Oh, no. I was just thinking like your daily commute becomes like humdrum because you don't understand how many people die in their cars going to work.
Absolutely. And the answer, of course, is a ton.
Yeah, a lot. Yes, quite a few. So then that's where I think Young comes up with, once they have the funds, that's where Young comes up with the veridical hypnosis. Yep. And so that becomes his sort of like way to rise up, right? He becomes now, you know, like... Well, no, I'm sorry. The professor, the chemist professor is then becomes distinguished Professor Zhang and so on and so forth. But yeah, like I do love that it gives this feeling that the court is now sort of abuzz with all sorts of, you know, new discoveries that are all horrible.
Right. Unreal. So,
I mean, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, bouncing around a little, like, how did you come across this story? Was it Dartboard or was it recommended?
I'd read this one a long time ago.
Okay.
I wish I would have said this at the beginning, but this, there was a magazine called Unlikely Stories. Which would have like a weird little theme, you know, like, I don't know, every so many months. I don't remember right now because it's been a while, but I want to say that it was like almost like quarterly. They would ask for, they'd have like a little prompt, you know, we want to know about unlikely maps, you know, unlikely this, unlikely that, blah, blah, blah. This one fell under, I believe, unlikely academia.
Hmm.
And you know, like the reason that I came across this one, I was reading because I wanted to try to, you know, get a story in with them, eventually I did. They ran the haunted clown car story.
Awesome.
I mean, it's. I mean, what happens if you buy a used car that used to be a clown car, you know, did they take all the clowns out? Read on to find out. But anyway, so I would say that I was reading this magazine when it was active, is since sadly gone inactive. You know, it's a dead magazine now. I just found this to be like a fascinating sort of like story because it, you know, like I'm not joking. It sort of scratches several itches in my brain at the same time. You know, mm-hmm. It's got the weird world building that is vague enough that it feels like five different types of eras. You know,
yeah.
It's got the philosophical question that's at the center of this, the moral question that follows. Right. And just the sort of like the existential horror of it all, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can make an argument, at least up to a certain point within the story, it's sort of a dressed up Omelas.
It could be, yeah. Yeah, somewhat. I think that I can't say that that was probably his goal here, right? Like, or yeah. his main target. But I can see the connections.
And if it was
something that got him thinking in that direction, he digested it well, you know?
Yeah, he certainly forestalled it by making the process more broadly available.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I do like that about halfway through the story, we get this tiniest little snippet of Professor Fu's sort of backstory, right? Where she is sort of become malleable because she was a little nobody that got sort of like essentially got foster parented, right? And they slowly, through a process of assimilation, because I mean, if you think about it, assimilation is essentially doing slower work, but it is doing similar things, right? Mm-hmm. Because part of that was actually something that struck me here. Part of the project, if you were to sort of go to 30,000 feet, is that the veridical hypnosis technique that they're using here is a way to forcibly reproduce culture in someone else.
Yeah. God.
So, I mean, it's essentially you're just stagnant. Like, I can foresee the future of this story being essentially this just a huge, like an almost interminable stagnation as the same people are in power.
Yeah.
Decade after decade.
And the other thing I think about is that some of these techniques, like what if you just wanted to condition a certain type of behavior in a village? Mm. Or you know what I mean? It's like you wouldn't have to go and try and take somebody's essential personality and hand it to the next guy. What if you just wanted an entire village to be hardworking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just seems to me that like this could become an educational technique pretty quick. And I mean, I'm definitely going off the path here. This is not where he's going with it all. It's just like the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a way to essentially smooth out any individual personality, right?
Right.
Because you want them to be like the blank slate where you can overlay them. It becomes clear that it's not 100%. It's not completely, you know, as we would call it now, lossless, right? Because there are moments, like there is that moment where the Dauphin takes Hemlock. He's apparently paralyzed enough at this point that they have to sort of massage his throat so he can swallow it. At more or less the same time as his, I guess, host, if you want to call it that, would be hypnotized and sort of like prepared for the final, you know, final memories, if you will.
Yeah.
And when presented, I forget exactly what the challenge is. Professor Fu like essentially manages to drive a wedge. And he has the person has like a moment of like that cognitive dissonance where they realize that they're not the person that was just talking.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. I guess disassociated them from each other, I suppose, is the
yeah
the word.
Yeah. I guess that's a loaded term, I guess. I love it.
Yes, I know. But I do find it really fascinating that one of the things that we find out towards, you know, the latter part of the story is that Professor Fu is also like they offer her a essentially like a promotion. Finally, she'd never been promoted, even though she's the only woman on the, I guess it would be like the board of regents of the, of a university or something. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly well above tenure.
Yes. Well above tenure. Yes. I mean, she's been at that position for at the end of this decades, it seems. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she finally gets a promotion to become like, you know, like, I guess a dean or whatever you want to call it. Exactly. And she turns it down because she is also going through the process of essentially transference to another body.
Yeah.
But did you catch the little detail?
The marriage?
No. Well, I mean, there is that. Yeah. She wants to get married to the Dauphin when he jumps again. Right. But before that, did you notice that she is going back and she's doing the highlights reel? She's going back and doing a historicity on herself, on her own background.
Oh, yeah.
Slowly, like brushing off all the little flaws so that she seems much more, you know, sort of like a cohesive narrative, if you will, right?
Yeah. Now, I did not catch that part. Like, I knew that she was writing everything down, but the implications didn't hit me. But
yeah, no, I mean, I think I'm trying to find here. Let me see here. Hold on. Give me a second here. I am positive that it's right in here. Anyway, yeah, I am positive that it's in this section. I just can't find it. Anyway, yeah, she's like doing little tiny things just to make things much more, you know, smooth.
Right.
Also hide, I guess, maybe some of her less than highborn background. Right. But I did find that interesting because then you can also have, you know, essentially, you know, like if you're a noble, why wouldn't you do that? Right. You present yourself as like you always had the mandate of heaven, you know, or something to that effect.
Well, and I mean, her background has a great secret in it. And why not scrub that out? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, well, especially if she's going to, like, if the Dauphin is sincere, which it seemed that he was, he'd become enamored of her. You know, if she's going to aspire to power, she needs to be, like, super duper squeaky clean, you know?
Yes. Caesar's wife. Quite literally, in this case.
Pretty much. The Dauphine's wife. Or the Dauphin's wife. Maybe she would be the Dauphine. I'm not sure. I don't know these fucking ranks. Fuck it.
Do not know how this works. But that's okay, because it does. The place doesn't exist, fortunately.
Thankfully, yes. But yeah. So I know that you have, like, you've essentially shuddered several times throughout this. Other than the heebie-jeebies, Pete, what did you think of this? Because this was like, you'd never read this before, right?
No, I have not. This was my first time. I thought it was very well done. I enjoyed it. I think it's perfectly okay for a story to give me the creeps. I mean, I don't believe the author's intent was to have me go and want to do this.
Well, he is in his day job. He is a professor of philosophy. So I would hope that he's on the right side of this one.
Right, right. I think it's impossible to imagine the idea of personality upload didn't cross his mind. Mm-hmm. During the writing of all this. I thought it was clever and it was interesting, and I think the fact that, you know, the people you're sympathetic towards in this story perpetuate the horror, mm-hmm. and don't, yep. you know, don't really engage with it on the level, like, except at the very beginning, they don't engage with it on the level that we're talking about is quite a revelation. And I think you hit it on the head, which is, you know, government involvement in the academy. Mm-hmm. you know, can lead to just about anything. I mean, it's not the main point of his story, but like he definitely dropped that in there and stepped back.
Well, I mean, I would, it's not just government, right? It's just, it's, I would argue that capture of any sort, right? Because like, that's sort of like the thing about, you know, like, oh, you know, this geologist is, you know, talking about like, oh, they, yeah. Have you ever read one of those stories where there's like, you know, this geology survey team or whatever found, you know, oh, brand new fossil or whatever. And you know what the first at these, you know, at this point, the first question that pops into my head sometimes is that, you know, that's cool and everything, but was this a team that was out there checking to see if there was oil for Chevron or Exxon or Dutch, you know, or Dutch Shell Company or whatever the fuck? You know, like it's always, that's the thing that makes me think it's sad because I want to be excited about new fossils.
Sure,
I like
absolutely.
Dinosaurs. But that's,
now I'm going to think about this, damn it.
Sorry, man.
It's okay.
It's almost like I'm transferring some phobias of mine to you, Pete. I didn't even need to hypnotize you.
That would have been a great addition to the Jurassic Park series if they did have somebody finding new ones and they made it very clear it was, you know, that sort of exploitation funding it.
Well, they never really focused too much on the workers in those amber mines, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there you go. That's...
There could have been a couple of silhouettes back there that looked a little small. I'm just saying. anyway, yeah. So I think it's again, I think it's a really well thought out type of question. And like you said, I absolutely believe that, you know, he knew about, like, you know, like the cyberpunk version of this, right? And it almost feels like he wanted to do, like, well, what if I did this way before that technology, like the same idea but way before this technology would have been available, how would they have done it, you know?
Yeah.
What would the techniques be at that point in time, and then work with that. I guess it's the Dixie Flatline if he had happened like in the Difference Engine.
Oh my God! <You know? laughs> There's a deep cut for you.
There you go.
This array of punch cards is actually Carlo.
God, you know, Pete, when you say it that way, it feels a little too on the nose. Carlo, yeah, he was totally analog. What can I say?
So, just out of curiosity, is there, I'm going off topic for a second. Are you reading anything for fun right now or watching anything for fun?
Let me think here. I mean, I think we talked about like, watching 30 Rock, but, yep. What am I? Hold on. Let me think a second because I've just been sort of like nose to the grindstone, like sort of trying to get that fucking novella finished.
Sure.
It's very close, but like I it's at the point where I don't even know what to do with myself because I'll play a game or I'll read something and get like this like weird ants and pants sort of like, I shouldn't be doing this. And it's never, I should be writing. It's, I shouldn't be doing this. And the reason I know that, you know, that I should actually be writing is because I just want to get it done. I want to write the next thing. You know,
right.
It's like my brain like wants me to finish, but also the minute I sit there, it's like, okay, what do I do now? Fucker, you got me sitting down. What do you want? So, you know, it is what it is.
Absolutely.
If that's the process now.
I'm just glad you're making progress, man. That's great.
Just trying, man. Got to keep myself busy. So what have you been reading anything interesting or?
Well, I told you guys about the Pratchetts, and I'm three away from being done with that, and so then I've got, you know, decisions. But I have been listening to the Silt Verses, and I find that is a fascinating storyline. Are you at all familiar with it?
No. What is it called again?
The Silt Verses, and it's a
silt
podcast.
Silt as in what, at the bottom of a river?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And the idea behind it is, it's in this world, it's possible to create gods. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a bunch of old gods, and there are new gods like Mr. Electric or the Coffee Man, and they are entirely corporatized. And part of your contract as an employee is, under the right circumstances, you become a sacrifice to be put in a new pylon for the electrical to work better, or to keep a Jeep factory going, or whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a bunch of people, and like there's a group of old god worshippers that discover an old ritual that is like the equivalent of a nuclear warhead, like just sort of sets back what the new gods are doing. And then there's another person who sort of goes through like all of these horrors that are, you know, the interaction of all the other main characters. And she decides to build a god that is just. Like she's like, okay, like this god thing is real and we're going to have to deal with it. And there's no escape from it. But what if I used the creation of God as a form of revolution?
Hmm.
And it's extremely cool. I am in the third season. In the past 5 days, I've probably listened to 18 hours of this damn podcast.
That's a lot of hours, Pete.
I've been doing some driving.
I figured, yeah. So this sounds, I'm not entirely familiar with this, but it sounds similar to like one of the fundamental concepts behind like the name of it? It's the Craft Cycle by Max Gladstone. I'm sure that somewhere in the world, as I uttered these words, this combination of words in that particular order, our buddy Madhematics just like his ears just started like twitching like mad, because he's been asking us to check these out for a while. Eventually is my answer. Yes.
There's a Felix Gilman, I think it's a duology, a mm-hmm. two book series that deals with.
Oh yeah, is this the one with the trains that are?
Oh well, that's a different set, and I could talk about those all day. But there's one about a city that has gods, and those gods can be created. But I mean, this podcast goes very. I mean, I'm very, very much into how they take this whole concept and use it to exploit people. That came out wrong, but it hit me real, is what I'm saying.
Okay, gotcha. So Pete, let me and I don't know if you had any other thoughts about that. I don't want to like cut you off.
Oh,
like,
I'm happy to move on.
Right. Okay, so. Can I propose something to you? And you could feel free to say no, but I had
I've
a
been
crazy
married
idea.
Enough, my friend.
No, it's not that.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, like what's the tax brackets like in Kansas, Pete? You
know? Not bad.
But what I was going to say is, so I got to thinking, because I forget when we were talking about like Zork, and you were a Zork head and stuff like that. And it got me thinking, what would you say to maybe an occasional, somewhat, maybe once a month? I don't know. I'm just thinking about this right now.
Yeah.
But 1 hour Infocom, you know, or the Infocom hour, let's put it that way. We play a agreed upon game in the Infocom catalog. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could extend it out to interactive fiction in general at some point in the future or whatever. But for the moment, I'm just thinking like 1 hour of Zork, you know, or whatever, right?
And Leather Goddess is a Phobos.
Yes. With the remember that it had the tea remover machine?
Mm-hmm.
Just a bunch of weird ass jokes in that. Hilarious if you're 13 and slightly horny.
Yes. What was the thing? There's the Hitchhiker's Guide one. That would be fun.
Oh my God. That would, 1 hour of Hitchhiker's Guide is just getting the Babel Fish. Mm-hmm. That is it.
It's a tremendously frustrating puzzle, but very funny.
No, it was very well put together, because once you do find out the sequence, like the almost Rube Goldberg sequence of events is very funny.
Yes.
But I don't know if you did it this way, Pete, in your neck of the woods, but it was generally, we'd have one guy who actually was, I guess his parents were rich enough to actually buy the games. And it would be that guy basically in the jockey, you know, in the jockey position, and three of us around him sort of like reading over his shoulder and like offering suggestions and stuff like that. I don't know if you ever played interactive fiction. It could be a team sport if you wanted.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I used to do that with my wife in The Last of Us. Like she was mapping in big picture, and I was trying not to get, you know, punched by a fungal dude, you know.
No, too many fun guys in that.
Indeed.
Hey-o. But yeah, like I was just thinking, like we do, you know, like maybe once a month we get back together, we decide upon one of the Infocom catalog games, and play it for an hour, come back and talk about it.
I think that sounds great.
Excellent. I'll figure something out. Maybe we'll just start out with the obvious one, right? Zork.
Yeah. It's a great place to start. Have you been hearing my boy sleeping and snoring the whole time? It's been very cute.
No. But I mean, it sounds very, very comforting.
Yes. Yeah. He's a good guy. He just, you know, doesn't know when not to be rude.
I mean, he is what, 80 pounds? What does he have to be polite about?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, 140 actually, but yeah, he's enough.
Okay, Pete, man, I don't know that we have much else to talk about this story. I think we got to the end of it. I think we both sort of agreed. I mean, again, I feel like there is a lot. I think that this one had a lot more to chew on than Mozart and Mirror Shades. After the fact, like, and that's, again, I think we talked about that one previously, but you know, it, not really its fault that it is now, you know, 40 years later, and a lot of the stuff that would have been prescient at the time or felt very sort of cutting edge have happened. So, you know, kudos to Mr. Sterling for sort of predicting certain things, I guess.
Yeah, just shocking and a little terrifying, but here we are pulling through it, dude.
Yep. All right. Well, Pete, thanks again for humoring me and reading another one of my stories.
Always happy to, man.
All right. Well, Pete, you give Chewy a big thumping and tell him he's a good boy. And thanks again, man.
You got it, man.
And everyone out there, thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next time here on Podside.